وما كانت من المخسيات من عندنا شلاكة تكشور النيل تامين التسمى الشيخ الرحيم.
Of the killing of Dhenuka, the ass demon. So far in this narration, he hasn't been killed. The friends of Krishna, the cowherd boys, are asking that this ass demon be killed. Now, this may seem strange because a Vaishnava is supposed to be non-violent, fair to all living beings. We see in the story of Mridari the hunter, when he became reformed by Narad Muni, he was so careful he didn't even want to kill an ant. We see also that Prabhupada, how Ishwari Prabhu describes in his Transcendental Diary how Prabhupada was, he thought he had killed a mosquito, but then he saw the mosquito was only stunned and got up and flew away. Prabhupada expressed some relief that the mosquito had not been killed. But here we see the cowherd boys who are eternal associates of Krishna asking Krishna to kill the demons in the form of an ass. Now you may think, well, that's just the way that they're brought up. You see, people are brought up in different cultures. They have different ways of thinking. There are different anthropological and sociological and psychological theories as towards the behavior of human beings. Is it, we see in Gita that Krishna speaks of Mashutta Sampadam Daiva Abhijatosi Pandava. Krishna tells Arjuna that do not fear, Arjuna, do not lament. You are born with the divine qualities. So it seems from this statement that birth, the kind of birth that is very important, to be born in a highest family, that means that you will have divine qualities, whereas the demons, they're expected to have bad qualities. Dambho, Dalpa, Vimanas, Trakrodha, Parvisham, Evacham. Akrodha, Agyanam, Chavijatasya, Partha, Sampadam, Asurim. Again, Krishna says that these qualities are inborn in those of demoniac nature, such as bad qualities. Usually when we say quality, it means something good, but a bad quality means arrogance, conceit, harshness, pride, rough speech, ignorance. These qualities are born with the demons. So, some people say that, well, everyone's more or less equal, but it all depends on your upbringing. But actually we see that's not true, is it? That even with the same upbringing, people come out differently. So there's said that people are born with certain qualities. That means according to their previous life, they have a certain outlook or a certain tendency. But there's also the sociological factor, the culture you're brought up in. That's why someone who's brought up in a family of meat eaters, he'll think it's very normal to eat meat, and you'll think nothing of, even in childhood, you'll think nothing of killing animals. Someone who's born on a farm in the West, nowadays, of course, farming in the West, it's like another factory kind of operation. But family farms, the people that, I remember when I was a child, we had some pet rabbits, and one day my father wrung their necks, and they were cooked. So, you know, what's the use of having them as pets? Might as well eat them. So, that was the way he was brought up. Of course, even in meat-eating families, children, generally they don't taste it very naturally. It has to be forced into them gradually. And then they get a taste for it. And I remember one of my sisters, up to the age of 7, she refused to eat meat. But then gradually, but she was forced to, day after day, and gradually got a taste for it, and she's going on and on for the last how many years, I don't know, she became vegetarian. So culture, it's also a factor in behavior. So the cowherd boys, you may think, well, they're just, you know, it's a pretty rough kind of caste. a rough kind of people, so maybe they didn't think anything of killing. Now traditionally cowherds, they have to be ready to kill also. It's part of life in the village. People think, well, the village is very peaceful and nice, but there's literally, padam padam yagipadam nateisham, there's literally danger at every step. It's not just a saying, but if you're living in the village, just like if you're taking the cows for pasture in the long grass, the snakes, they like to go in the long grass, and it's very common that people get bit. Just the other day, out of the farm where I was staying, one bull was grazing in the long grass, enjoying the nice grass, and the snake bit it. Poisonous snake. You may be walking up. The scorpion bites you. The small scorpions, they go inside their shoes. You have to be careful. You have these shoes. These kind of leather shoes that cover your whole foot. You have to be careful to, you have to shake them first to see maybe a scorpion's going to bite you. So there's danger at every step. So they're used to killing. The coward people, they're accustomed to killing snakes, scorpions, even previously tigers, lions. They may not kill the kshatriya, they have to go to kill the cows. You see these deer cows from the forest area in Gujarat where the lions are. The lions are afraid to come near them. They're only cows. But they're competent to fight with lions. So the cowherd people are used to some kind of fighting, so you may think, well, it's just their culture or their upbringing. But actually, there's more to it than this. The demon, Dhenuka, he's taken the form of an ass. That means that presumably he wasn't always in this form, but he's taken this particular form to, for whatever reason, he's decided to be in this form to give trouble to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. But he's already known as a man-eater. Presumably not in his asa. Generally asas, they're not man-eaters. We didn't hear of man-eating asses. Maybe in this human-like form. And we may think that sometimes if we hear this story, we think, why do you want to kill the ass? It's just, you know, it's a common thing nowadays. You may even find wild asses here in Gujarat, or wild asses, so you may not want to go in that area because there may be nice fruits there, but you may not want to go there if there are many wild asses who may chase you away. Although, from what I've seen of wild asses, they're usually very afraid of human beings. But anyway, you can understand, just like a horse, an ass, they're kind of dangerous creatures. The front side is dangerous, they might bite you. The back side is dangerous, they might kick you. And in the middle, if you try to get on them, it's also dangerous, they can throw you off. So, you have to be very careful with horses and asses. But why should you kill them? Why kill them? Can't you just chase them away? If you want to enjoy the food, alright, chase them away. The Vaishnava philosophy of the Vedic culture is that you don't necessarily do any harm to any living being. Even trees should not be cut unnecessarily. Prabhupada is very particular. Sometimes he's very upset when he saw that a tree had been cut on ISKCON's property in one place. I can't remember where. Prabhupada was very upset when he saw that a tree had been cut in Dallas. Why have you cut this tree unnecessarily? So even a tree should not be cut. What to speak of killing an animal like an ass? But of course, this is a demon. And demons, their nature is to be simply causing trouble to others. And especially, they are opposed to Krishna, and especially they are envious of Krishna's enjoyable pastimes. Now you may say, well, he's only stopping from getting the fruit. But that is a symptom. That is typical of the demons. That they want to act for their own sense gratification and deny that for Krishna. Everything is meant to be offered to Krishna. But Dhenuka and his asses, they wanted to stop Krishna and his friends enjoying the fruit. They wanted that we shall enjoy and Krishna shall not enjoy. It's a demoniac attitude. Whether it's denying fruit to Krishna or whether it's killing and eating human beings, it's demoniac. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his childhood, he was admonished by his father for eating a mango which was not offered to Krishna. And he thought, I'm a great offender. Why should I do that? I'm not supposed to do that. And he took a vow, I shall never eat mango again in my life. Although he took Kapchatma, green language, which is generally cooked. Ripe mango, he never again took in his life because he thought that it's not suitable for a devotee. I'm supposed to be a devotee. This is a non-devotional attitude to eat something which is not offered to Krishna. He was so strict. According to Shastra, you're not supposed to wear any clothes without offering them to the Lord, not even take medicine, not even drink water. Prabhupada sometimes told the story of a man in Calcutta who was so strict, he would go to his office all day, but he would never drink any water unless it was offered to the Lord. He would come back home and drink the water which had been offered at home to the deity at home. He was so strict. It's the Vaishnava principle that everything should be offered to Krishna. And violation of that principle is actually demoniac. That's why even the pious followers of the Vedas, they can also be demoniac if they don't come to the point of offering everything to Krishna. The Vanashram system is meant for doing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. One may follow the Vanashram principles very nicely, but if he doesn't act for the pleasure of Krishna, then he's considered a demon, just like Jarasandha. He was following the Vedic principles very nicely. Karna was following the Vedic principles very nicely. Of course, in the case of Karna, there was a great discrepancy in that he was one of the main instigators in the humiliation of Draupadi. Now, according to the strict law of the Vedic principles, they had a right to do that. According to the strict law, because Draupadi had been won and was their property. Of course, it's arguable if you could ever make someone else's wife your property. But at least according to one outlook, they had the right to do it. But actually, the one Vedic principle was that Draupadi was their property. It was overridden by the far more important Vedic principle of not insulting women. You cannot make someone else's wife your property anyway. So even though they may have thought themselves technically correct in following the Vedic principles, and they were wrong, they were very wrong. And as a result of the insulting of Draupadi, the whole of the Kuru dynasty was destroyed for that sinful activity. So they were following the Vedic principles, but they were envious of Krishna. Therefore they had to be killed as demons. There's no point in following the Vedic principles if you're envious of Krishna. There's no point in even calling yourself a devotee if one is envious of Krishna. Sometimes we see that. I mean, not sometimes, we always see, because as much as we're not fully Krishna conscious, that much we're envious of Krishna. We think everything should be for my pleasure. Even I'm presently in the middle of a highly emotional fracas, whatever you want to call it, in which some people who are, one of the mother of the family is an initiated devotee, initiated by an ISKCON guru, voluntarily offered her younger son, please, he should join ISKCON and dedicate his life to Krishna. And then after a few months insisting, now he must come back, I want my son back. I'm quoting Shastra, but the duty is to serve the mother even though the elder son is there. And I'm writing some letter back, and the only answer I will accept is if you send my son back. No reasoning. Instead of training her son or encouraging her son to have unconditional surrender to Krishna, she wants that he should have unconditional surrender to her because she wants him to be at home. Of course, I'm wondering if he got a $10,000 a month job in America, would she insist that he come home? He doubted very much. But the point here is that the intelligence is cut. Even though chanting Hare Krishna, what Krishna wants, or how someone can dedicate their life to Krishna, what is even in their best self-interest, if their son does dedicate his life to Krishna fully, and becomes a pure devotee, which he's got a much better chance of doing than joining the rat race and going back to his job working 15 hours a day as a computer professional and somehow trying to fit in some time to chant 16 rounds, somehow or other. If instead he dedicates his life to Krishna, then not only the family members, immediate family members, but so many generations will be delivered. But because they're thinking in terms of material relationships, this is my son and I have to see him. Otherwise, there are so many sons who have jobs, outstation jobs, they go away from home. But the parents are satisfied. Isn't it? Your parents are not saying that you have to come and sit at home. They're satisfied that you're here and you've got a good job, you're earning money. But if the son wants to go away from home and serve Krishna, oh, very bad. So this is, actually, it's not that the person who's chanting Hare Krishna can't be called a demon, but it's the non-devotional attitude by which one thinks that, yes, we piously serve God, but God's main duty is to satisfy me. Dinaka would have been very happy if Krishna had come and worshipped him and praised him, that, oh Dinaka, you are such a wonderful ass. You are such a great ass. Please let me, why should you go to the trouble of collecting these towel poops? I will collect them for you and offer them to you. He would be very happy. But that is not his ontological position of all you. Natural position of Dinaka or every other living being is not to be served by Krishna, but to serve Krishna. All the nice things should be offered to Krishna. But instead Dinaka is denying that these things should be offered to Krishna. They should be enjoyed by me. We shall deny Krishna. We shall not give to Krishna. Just like you see, people were encouraging, give some donation for serving Krishna. So people are thinking, I'm very pious. I'm giving 1,000 rupees or 10,000 rupees. I'm very pious. But they're spending crores of rupees for their own sense gratification. I'm thinking I'm very pious because I gave 10,000 rupees or 1 lakh of rupees for the service of Krishna. But why are you spending the rest on sense gratification? If you actually understand the principle, you should give everything to Krishna. Sometimes we see in human society there are great philanthropists. Just like, what was that, Andrew Carnegie from Dunfermline in Scotland, who went to America as a poor boy and earned millions of dollars. And he said that, I will not die, I don't want to die with even a, I don't want to leave even a cent to my son. Everything should be spent for public benefit. So he opened many libraries and had many foundations for the public benefit that people should be. And you see also now this Bill Gates gave $1 billion for health also. He gave also for helping minorities in their education, minority groups, grants so that they can go through college. So the idea is that you should do something. But, I mean, there are so many. The Hindujas, they're opening hospitals. The idea that I should do something for the public welfare. But actually they don't understand what is the real welfare. The real welfare is to serve Krishna. No amount of hospitals, schools, or whatever is going to ultimately help anybody because you simply have to get born again and die again. Even you go to the hospital, it doesn't help. Even the school, it's an act of violence, practically. That you think you're getting educated. Just like now it's very common in our society to open schools, in which they give it the name Bhaktivedanta school, but they're not teaching Bhaktivedanta. They're teaching Darwin school, which is demonic, and it's nonsense. And it's exactly opposite of what Prabhupada is teaching. Prabhupada is saying we should kick this out of the school. And we're having the name Bhaktivedanta school. And teaching Brahmins. It's an insult to Prabhupada. But they're saying, oh, you see the children, they come to school with tilak and they chant Hare Krishna. For 10 minutes they sing before they go and learn Brahmins. How wonderful. This is not wonderful. This is the same thing as the the pious materialists, just like you'll see so many smarters, they chant Vishnu Sahasranam and they think they're very pious. But their aim and object is sense gratification. So Dhenuka is considered a demon because he has nothing but enmity to Krishna in mind. But anyone, even a so-called pious person, as much as they are not fully surrendered to Krishna, that still that demoniac propensity is there. As much as we want that I should enjoy separately from Krishna, that is the demoniac propensity. Now Krishna is very kind to kill the demon. So actually we think that he's killing the demons anyway, they are to be killed. Krishna is killing it in the form of time. Krishna is killing everybody. But by killing these demons, he's showing that those, that the, anyway everyone has to die by the laws of nature, but by personally killing these demons, Krishna is showing that this demoniac attitude that should be driven out and should not be allowed to exist in human society should be stopped by one means or another. Of course the real means is to give Krishna consciousness. But in Vedic society there are also kings who would kill. That was considered a pious act for a king to kill a murderer or a grossly sinful person. Now they have this idea of executive clemency. Someone may be pardoned by the king or the president. But no, he shouldn't be pardoned. This may be difficult for people brought up in the modern liberalistic age to understand. There's much protest against, in America in some states, this capital punishment is allowed, and some people are protesting. But they don't know. From our vantage point, we may think it's very bad, but we don't know. We have to see from the eye of Shastra. Why the cowherd boys wanted the Dhenuka demon to be killed when a Vaishnav should not even kill an ant? Because they're acting on the platform of the absolute truth, which is understood by Shastra. Manu has forbidden even killing snakes unnecessarily, but he exhorts that the king should kill a murderer. So why should you kill a human being if you're not even supposed to kill a snake? What is bad in one circumstance is good in another. Everything has to be understood through Shastra. And therefore the king, he had to have advisors who would advise, because sometimes the situation is very complex. Dharma is very difficult to understand. Therefore, you would have learned brahmanas as advisors who would say what is the best thing to do in this situation. Because there may be different. Often what happens is that one rule of dharma contradicts another, apparently. So that you see in Mahabharata so many times, that Arjuna had taken a vow to kill anyone who told him to throw away his Gandiva, to give up his Gandiva. And Yudhishthira sarcastically told him, so Arjuna was ready to kill Yudhishthira. Krishna told him, you can't do that. I made it up. Anyway, you can't kill the king. You can't kill your brother. So it's the two rules are contradictory. So what to do in such a circumstance? That requires people who know the purpose of dharma. Therefore, a Vaishnava should be a guru. What is that verse? Shat karma nipano vipra. Mantrata tantra vishayata. A Vaishnava guru nasya Vaishnava shtapacha guru. Even if one is very expert in performing all the Vedic rituals, he is not fit to be a guru if he is not a Vaishnava. And even if a Vaishnava is not expert in all the details of understanding the Vedic activities, if he's a Vaishnava, he should be a guru because he knows the purpose. He knows the ultimate purpose. Whereas one who is a Smarthavadi, one who follows the smriti, he can't get proper advice. We see that what was the name of that devotee who was converted into a Muslim by the Nawab, who was previously his servant. Subuddhi Rai. Yes, I was thinking Rai, which Rai? Subuddhi Rai. So he was converted into a Muslim, although there's actually nothing in Shastra that if If a Muslim sprinkles you with some water from his water pot, there's nothing in Shastra that you should be excommunicated from Hindu society. But the Brahmins at that time, they made such a convention, although it's not in Shastra, that they say there's no prayaschitta, there's no atonement for being sprinkled with the water from a Muslim's water pot. You have to become a Muslim. You have to become an outcast. You have to become a BP. A very foolish idea. There's nothing in Shastra, but when they were confronted with this, that the Muslims, they want to convert, so they'll convert you, but one of their rituals is sprinkling some water from a water pot. And they say, now you become a Muslim. The Hindu Bhattacharyas and priests, they could have said, no, you're not become a Muslim, don't take bath in the Ganga, you're free from all sins, and go on and be whatever you are, Brahmin, Vaishya, Kshatriya, whatever. They said, no. Now you're... So the Subhadi Rai, he was apparently converted to a Muslim. Then he said to the Bhattacharya, the Bhattacharya means the Karmakandi priests, who they'll sit on the bank of the Ganga, Haridwar, they'll have their different books, prescribing different atonements. So he asked, he went to Varanasi and asked, what should I do? They said, the only way you can atone for this sin is to drink hot boiling ghee, which will kill you. Death is the only atonement. And others said some other things. Then he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, very good. Now you're outcast from Hindu society, very good. Then you leave your home, family position and go to Vrindavan and serve Krishna. Very lucky for you. So he did. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, acting as the guru of the whole world, knew the meaning of it. What is the meaning of Shastra? Vaidaishya Sagara Hameva Vedyaha. The whole purpose of Shastra is to bring us to the point of loving Krishna. And whatever sinful activities we may have performed, even though being sprinkled from a Muslim's water pot isn't very, it's not actually sinful. It's just they presume that they made some convention that by doing that you became infected by all the sins of the Muslims. So even if you consider it sinful, then you can be freed from all sin just by chanting the holy names of Krishna. What is that verse? Sankirtan Parihasyam Vatstobam Helam Nirabam Vaikuntha Nama Grahanam Asheshagam Harang Viduhu Vidu. Those who are actually learned in Vedic knowledge, they say that even by chanting the name of Vaikuntha, even to indicate something else, just like someone may say, where is Vaikuntha? You may say, well, just go down this road, take a left, and maybe Vaikuntha Society or something like that. That means Sankit, to indicate something else, or where is Vaikuntha Das? Or in joking, oh, look at that Vaikuntha, ha, look at him, hoo. Or telling a joke, they have some Bokaram. You say that in Hindi? In Bengali, it's Bokaram. It means a fool. So you may call someone a fool, but the name Ram is there. Or you, another sankhit as we have in the West, Nandarama, Sinarama. It's some kind of hybrid English word. Sorry, to indicate something else, by joking, Parihasanga, Stobha, even as a musical entertainment. Haram, the Muslim, that comes up, that example is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Muslim says, Haram, meaning something very bad. And the Vaishnav says, Haram, Hey Ram. Mahatma Gandhi is supposed to have said, Hey Ram at the time of death, although that, what's his name, God say? What's his matter? What's God say? What's his first name? He shot Mahatma Gandhi? Nataram. Naturam, another Ram. Godse, yeah, Godse. Godse. that apparently is he told that he didn't say Hey Ram. Anyway, whether he said it or not. Anyway, so even as musical, now to use the name of Krishna as musical entertainment, it's actually forbidden by Shastra. It's forbidden in Vaishnav. You know, you see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a whole long list of things that one shouldn't do. It's all cheating religion. If one becomes a guru just to maintain his family, if he performs a musical band, he gives a whole list. Guru Bemshoi, Kirtan Bemshoi, all business, business, business. Kirtan business, guru business, all these. This puja bhemshoi, you do arati and puja just to get some money. But from another outlook, in another sense, it's also some kind of piety by chanting the name. Even if it's done as a musical entertainment. We hear so many kirtan cassettes. It's mostly done for entertainment. Nowadays in ISKCON we don't hear Prabhupada's cassettes very much because there are more musically entertaining people with very sweet voices who sing very sweetly Radharamana Haribol and so many things which are just some made up. It's not in Shastra. It's just someone has made up something and it sounds very nice. So people like to sing it. But it's just for entertainment. They make a cassette for some money. Still the name of Krishna is there. It's not very good. Or even neglectfully. If one chants, but he's not hearing properly, he's not attentive. Still, even that kind of chanting, that's not pure devotional service, but even that can save one from sin. Ashesha, from many, many sins. Ashesha, Haram, Vidhu, that can save one from sin. Of course, such chanting will not give love of Krishna. If we hear Prabhupada chanting, chanting should not. Chanting, however, should be heard from the lips of pure devotees. Prabhupada, that cassette we've heard many times. As much as possible, chanting from the lips of non-devotees should be avoided, as much as milk touched by the lips of a snake as poisonous offense. So, the point is being, there are different sides. One side is that anyway chanting is auspicious, but on the other hand, chanting of any kind that can save you from all kinds of sins, but it won't give love. It won't give love of God unless it's heard from pure devotees. So, the point anyway has been made that those who are Vedavadarata, those who are attached to the external meaning of the Vedas, they don't understand what is the Vedic message, and they'll quote Shastra. Even they may be very pious, but they're avoiding Krishna. Of course, such people are generally not to be encouraged to come to the proper Vaishnava path. Those who are grossly demoniac, they are being made an example of by Krishna. That such people should, such things should not be allowed in human society. That one is directly denying Krishna. That should not be allowed. That is demoniac. The cowherd boyfriends of Krishna are asking Krishna, kill this demon. Go Brahmana Hitayacha. Krishna is the friend of the cows and of the Brahmanas. One speak of Brahmanas, certainly the Vrajvasis. And he is Jagatita, he acts for the benefit of the whole world. So Dhenuka and other demons say, he's not acting for my benefit. But yes, he's acting for the benefit of the whole world by removing such demons. That is one of the functions of the avatar. Bhavadara Haram. He takes away the burden of the earth in the form of demoniac persons. And he also acts for the benefit of such demons because by killing them, he stops them performing any more sinful activities in that body. That the king, by killing as the representative of God, he kills someone like a murderer to stop him from performing any more sinful activities so that he doesn't get more and more punishment in hell. But when Krishna kills, there's even more benefit. Because he's touched by Krishna. He can become fully purified and get liberation from material bondage. So everything Krishna does is all auspicious, even though the his killing, that's also auspicious. Here we have a picture of the Rasli. People are generally very attracted to Rasli. But actually the importance of Rasalila can't be understood unless we understand the importance of all the leelas. If we attach importance only to Rasalila, but we don't understand the significance of Krishna's killing the demons, then we can't properly understand Krishna. Because Krishna is multifaceted. He's not one-sided. It's not only that he's dancing with the gopis. He's also killing the demons. He's also taking the forms of the Purusha avatars to generate and oversee the universe. So one should understand all these things. Bhagavad Katla Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayati. By understanding the signs of God, one is liberated from material contamination. As long as one is materially contaminated, one cannot understand Krishna. So one should understand these signs. It's come side by side. Along with Prem Katha has to come Bhagavad Katla Vijnanam, knowledge of Krishna. That's why we're exalted to study Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita Nitta Karo Panjaha Hoite Premananda Bhakti Tapta Gyan. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami advises to daily drink the nectar of Chaitanya Charitamrita, by which we will get Premananda, but side by side knowledge of Bhakti Tapta. So all these things are required. All these things should be understood. Otherwise, without knowledge of Bhakti Tattva, then even we may be chanting, we may be serving Krishna, but we don't make very fast advancement. Without knowledge of Bhakti Tattva, then progress can be very slow. We may remain very attached to our so-called family, friends, relatives, all these things. And be acting mostly, even though chanting Hare Krishna, acting mostly for our own sense gratification, which is the nature of Dhinata. He directly denied Krishna. So, that Dhinata tendency to deny Krishna, that has to be killed within the heart of the devotee. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Well, I was...
My question is, wouldn't it be better to be a smart for following Vedic rituals and Vedic system rather than a person who received a modern education and who had no idea what the Vedic systems are for elevation?
Is, which one is better than the other? Well, it's sometimes when people ask this, is it better to be a... Which is worse, to take meat or to take drugs? I just give the example of wet stool and dry stool. It's like, you know, whether you pass green stool or brown stool, what does it matter? No, both things are bad. But then the smart, modern smarters, they're all getting modern education also.
I'm not talking about someone who's a caste smarter, I'm talking about
someone who's... It's a very general thing, because some caste smarters, they're very, you can't say, because some are very materialistic, some are very, even though they're following all these things, they're actually very demoniac in their outlook, and they're very much against bhakti. Yeah, so you can't generalize. Neither are very much desirable.
Isn't there a place where Prabhupada says something like, we go to room in Vedika, for instance?
Still, he was a demon. Yeah. So many. So many followers of the Vedic principles were demons.
Now, the modern education is not.
Modern education is also demoniac. Why anyone would want to put.
Because society is weakened, that's why. Because the rest of the society is called innovation. Everyone's going...
Well, another reason is that our society hasn't actually given a good alternative. So people require some kind of education. They need to know to read. If they're going to function in society, not everyone's going to be a sadhu, sannyasi. So to function in the modern world, we also need some kind of education. It's pragmatism. There's idealism and there's pragmatism. So the ideal is that we should... The ideal is that we should be fully divorced from the modern demoniac society, but practically speaking, it's not so easy. Any question? No.
You said that whether one fully surrenders to Krishna or one fully against Krishna, it is the same thing.
Who said it's the same
thing? Sarva said, whether Krishna protects or kills, the result will be the same.
The result will be the same in as much as you come in contact with Krishna, but in not exactly the same. Because in most cases, those who are killed by Krishna, they may get Sayujya Mukti, or they may get Sarupya Mukti, but they don't get Galok Prem. So, anyway, you have to be a really very serious demon, and even one in many, many, many billions may be killed by Krishna. So better not to be against Krishna. You have to be a very intense demon. You have to go to hell many times before you become a perfectly bad demon, and you get the chance to be personally killed by Krishna. It's not a very good proposition to be against Krishna.
I don't say that.
You just said it.
I said it. But to be a favorite one is also enough.
It's difficult, but then, what do you want to do? You want to be a demon?
Of course, be a pure devotee is much easier than
being a pure demon. Then if it's too difficult, then don't bother. Just, you know, become a frog in your next life and a dog in the life after that. You know, just, why bother, son? Maybe difficult, but what else is there to do? Re-enter the cycle of birth and death. It's not difficult to chant. Jai Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranaki.